70. £1,000, said Flynn O'Flynn, as though it were a benediction, and he scooped another mugful of the black liquid and poured it over Sebastian Oldsmith's clean-shaven scalp. Think of it, Bassie, my lad, £1,000. Your half share of that is 500. Why, you'll be in a position to pay me back every penny you owe me. You'll be out of debt at last. They were camped on the Abati River, one of the tributaries of the Rufiji. 6 miles downstream was Commissioner Fleischer's woodcutting camp. It's money for jam, opined Flynn. He was sitting comfortably in a rempy chair beside the galvanized iron tub in which Sebastian Oldsmith squatted with his knees drawn up under his chin. Sebastian had the dejected look of a spaniel taking a bath in flea shampoo. The liquid in which he sat was the colour and viscosity of strong Turkish coffee, and already his face and body were a dark purpley chocolate colour. "Sebastian isn't interested in the money," said Rosa Oldsmith. She knelt beside the tub, and tenderly as a mother bathing her infant, she was ladling the Msenga juice over Sebastian's shoulders and back.
I know," Flynn agreed quickly. "We are all doing our duty. We all remember little Maria, may the Lord bless and keep her tiny soul. But the money won't hurt us either."
And Sebastian closed his eyes as another mugful cascaded over his head.
"Rub it into the creases round your eyes, and under your chin," said Flynn, and Sebastian obeyed. "Now let's go over it again, Bassie, so you don't get it all balled up. One of Muhammad's cousins is boss boy of the gang loading the timbers into the launches. They are camped on the bank of the Rufiji. Muhammad will slip you in tonight, and tomorrow his cousin will get you onto one of the launches, going down with a load for Blucher. All you've got to do is keep your eyes open. Joyce just wants to know what work they're doing to repair her, whether or not they've got the boilers fired, things like that. You understand?"
Sebastian nodded glumly.
"You'll come back up river tomorrow evening, slip out of camp as soon as it's dark and meet us here. Simple as a pimple, right?"
"Right," murmured Sebastian.
"Right then, out you get and dry off."
As the dry wind from the uplands blew over his naked body, the purple tint of the dye faded into a matte chocolate. Rosa had modestly moved away into the grove of marula trees behind the camp. Every few minutes, Flynn came across to Sebastian and touched his skin.
"Coming along nicely," he said, and "nearly done," and "geez, you look better than real."
And then finally in Swahili, "Right, Muhammad, mark his face." Muhammad squatted in front of Sebastian with a tiny gourd of cosmetics, a mixture of animal fat and ash and okra. With his fingers he daubed Sebastian's cheeks and nose and forehead with the tribal patterns. His head held on one side in artistic concentration, making soft, clucking sounds of concentration as he worked, until at last Muhammad was satisfied.
"He is ready. Get the clothes," said Flynn.
This was an exaggeration. Sebastian's attire could hardly be called clothing. A string of bark around his neck, from which was suspended a plunged yucca horn filled with snuff, a cloak of animal skin that smelt of wood smoke and man sweat draped over his shoulders.
"It stinks,"
said Sebastian, cringing from contact with the garment.
"And it's probably got lice."
"The real thing," agreed Flynn jovially. "All right, Muhammad. Show him how to fit the istopo, the hat."
"I don't have to wear that also," Sebastian protested, staring in horror as Muhammad came towards him grinning.
"Of course you've got to wear it."
Impatiently, Flynn brushed aside his protest. The hat was a hollow 6-inch length cut from the neck of a calabash gourd. An anthropologist would have called it a penis sheath. It had two purposes. Firstly, to protect the wearer from the scratches of thorns and the bites of insect pests, and secondly, as a boost to his masculinity. Once in position, it looked impressive, enhancing Sebastian's already considerable muscular development. Rosa said nothing when she returned. She took one long, startled look at the hat, and then quickly averted her gaze, but her cheeks and neck flared bright scarlet.
"For God's sake, Bassie, act like you're proud of it. Stand up straight and take your hands away," Flynn coached his son-in-law.
Mohammed knelt to slip the rawhide slippers onto Sebastian's feet and then hand him the small blanket roll it tied with bark string. Sebastian slung it over one shoulder, then picked up the long-handled throwing spear. Automatically, he grounded the butt and leaned his weight on the shaft, lifting his leg and placing the sole of his foot against the calf of his right leg. He stood in the stork posture of rest. In every detail he was a Wakamba tribesman.
"You'll do," said Flynn.